Yes, I'm Richard Solomon. I'm also the principal investigator for this research, which we've been conducting over the past year across Burma. This is a population-based assessment of health and human rights, as Dr. Levy said, in Chin State, Western Burma specifically. This project is a collaboration among several institutions, Physicians for Human Rights, the Center for Public Health and Human Rights at Johns Hopkins University, as well as a Global Health Access Program. I have no relationships to disclose. Burma, also known as Myanmar, is a country in South Asia, roughly the size of Texas, which over the past five decades has been ruled by successive military regimes, quite oppressive. The current military junta, led by General Tan Shwe, has waged a number of civil wars, armed civil wars against ethnic minorities, who account for roughly a third of the country's total population of 50 million. Actually, elections took place yesterday. They were neither free nor democratic, but it's interesting to see how these elections are impacting human rights. I've been reading emails all day today talking how the elections have actually spawned more human rights violations. So, unfortunately, these elections have not accomplished much. Now, Chin State, where we conducted the first phase of our research, is an isolated ethnic minority state in western Burma, bordering India. It has a population of roughly 500,000 people, which is about 1% of the country's total population. The vast majority of the people who live there are ethnically Chin and are Christian in their faith. The aims of our study were to quantify human rights violations, to identify the patterns associated with these alleged human rights violations, as well as the associations with health status. Given the limited time that I have this afternoon, I'm just going to summarize our research on the quantification of human rights violations. We created our sample frame by obtaining maps from the United Nations, which had a complete list of 991 villages across Chin State. We then merged that with a Department of Defense database that had the same villages, but also had, importantly, geographic coordinates associated with those villages. We were then able to overlay what's called ambient population estimates, which came from the LandScan database of Oak Ridge National Laboratories. We had access to all nine townships. We designed an 87-question survey, which we trained 23 local surveyors to implement this retrospective cluster survey. We used probability proportional to size sampling in both urban and rural towns across Chin State to select the 90 clusters. And to select the 8 households in each of the clusters, we used random start proximity sampling. Overall, we had 99% of the intended clusters ended up in our survey, 98% of our intended households participated, and we had a quite high participation rate. 86% of these households gave informed consent to participate. Now, before I get to the results, I just want to touch on where these human rights violations come from. Where are these human rights? They can be categorized differently, but the way I've categorized them here is basically by treaty. So these are three treaties that codify these human rights. They can be found in other international treaties and covenants as well. But for our survey, we looked specifically at crimes against humanity. There are 11 crimes that are delineated in the 1998 Rome Treaty, which is the treaty which established the Permanent International Criminal Court in The Hague, Netherlands. And from our data, we gathered evidence of 7 of the 11 crimes. Now, we have very strict inclusion criteria for these reported human rights violations to be a part of our data set. So first of all, the respondent had to answer a series of follow-up questions, basically who, what, where, when, and why, and how the incident took place. The incident had to have taken place within the preceding 12 months of the interview, so 2009 and 2010, roughly. The respondent had to be an eyewitness to the actual incident. And of course, the unit of analysis is household, so we're only looking at events within the specific household, within a specific family. And lastly, the respondent, who was a head of household, had to identify a government authority as a perpetrator. So this table presents the results just on the 11 alleged crimes against humanity. On the far left column, we see the 11 crimes. In the second column, we have the 12-month prevalence rate listed. And the third column is the population exposed. So if you extrapolated these results to Chin State, which we were able to do because of our pretty rigorous methodology, these are point estimates for all of Chin State. And the last column are the 95% confidence intervals constructed for this research. So looking one by one, 1% of the households reported a family member being killed over the preceding 12 months. Roughly 3% of the households reported a family member being raped, which included men, women, and children. Almost 4% of the households reported a family member being tortured. We define torture as severe physical or mental suffering, and we operationalized it by adding a time limit. So if it was less than 10 minutes, we marked that down as beating. If it was over 10 minutes, we marked that down as torture. Almost 5% of the households reported a family member being kidnapped or disappeared over the past 12 months, 6% being detained or imprisoned. Over 14% of the households reported group persecution. So that's a human rights violation that is based on that person's ethnicity or religion. And lastly, striking 87% of the households reported at least one incident over the past 12 months of any type of forced labor. Now, looking at the perpetrators, we can see that the vast majority of the 1,621 reported crimes against humanity that we gathered were committed by the Tatmadaw, which is the Burmese military, the SPDC. Now, if we include the 27% of the reported perpetrators who are the VPDC, the Village Peace and Development Council, these are basically the civilian proxies of the Burmese military. So adding those two together, roughly 96% or so. Only roughly 2% of these reported crimes were committed by the ethnic forces, namely the Chin National Army. So these last couple of slides is just touching on the legal parameters of how the International Criminal Court, specifically the prosecutor's office of the ICC, would go about if they had the authority to investigate the Burmese military for these alleged crimes against humanity, that certain things would have to be proven. So for example, because the Rome Treaty, which established the ICC, came into force in July 2002, there's a temporal jurisdiction that the court has. So in other words, the court can only look at human rights violations or crimes that happen after that. So this is referred to as Common Element 1. And our data that we gathered is all from 2009, 2010. So it meets this temporal jurisdiction. In other words, human rights violations, that's a long way of saying human rights violations are ongoing. Element 2, if the prosecutor's office of the ICC were to investigate, these crimes, they would have to prove that such crimes were committed against a civilian population. Now, in our sample, 89% of the people were women, children, and the elderly. So there is, and there is really no armed conflict actually in Chin State, despite the fact that there is a very small armed ethnic forces called the Chin National Army. They only number in several hundred. So unlike on the eastern side with Karen and Shan states, those are active armed conflicts, and there is not that happening on the western border. So element two is met that civilians comprise those people who are being targeted by the Burmese military. And lastly, and importantly, common element three refers to in order for these human rights violations to constitute crimes against humanity, they have to be widespread or systematic. Widespread or systematic. You can refer to those, you can think of those as either quantitative or qualitative. So this was a quantitative study that we did. So we gathered evidence on these self-reports of crimes as widespread. So the 1,621 self-reports of these crimes that we gathered happened in all nine townships of Chin State. This is actually looking at the human rights violations. It's a density map. So most of the, not most, but when you look at the density, the southern three townships in Chin State had a preponderance of the human rights violations, although they did take place across all nine townships. It's actually interesting. I'm looking at the data right now and correlating that with proximity to military bases. And it just so happens to be that most of the military bases that are located in Chin State are located in those three townships. So in conclusion, so Physicians for Human Rights is also an advocacy organization. So we are going to be pressing for a United Nations Commission of Inquiry, which is an official investigation into these alleged crimes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Open for questions, comments, please.
The question was regarding any possible incidents or challenges that our survey team faced while they were in Chin State. It's a very good question. So we had a pretty intensive 2 weeks worth of training across the border in India. So the locals, it's a pretty porous border, so people can get in and out. And we selected people, for the most part, who were health professionals working for community-based organizations in the region. So these are some of the, you know, the brightest Burmese. So they actually have like a 10th form education. And so we are very happy to report that there were no incidents. There were no security incidents. They were never found out by the Burmese military. And part of that was I think the reason why we passed our IRB application at UCLA as well as Johns Hopkins is that we were very conservative how we went about the research. This research took several months to complete, and the reason why we did it that way is so that the researchers themselves would only basically have to do one survey every day. So in other words, they could take their time, they could approach homes cautiously. They could actually stay outside of the village until the military left. So that is the way they went about their research.
There was a high incidence of persecution, I think, in the early objective. What comprised persecution?
Persecution, the way we operationalize that term is basically using the UN definition, so in these treaties. So group persecution is basically any human rights violation that has an ethnic or a religious component. So for example, if someone is being forced to do forced labor and that person hears, for example, that the military said, you're Christian, you know, the Burmese military are not Christian, this is a Christian minority. If there is some sort of recognition that the reason why that human rights violation is being conducted is because of their religion or ethnicity or other social group basis, Bennett's term through persecution.
So were they denied something, or were they, I mean, what might they do to someone to persecute them?
So, for example, making them perform forced labor. Another a very good example would be knocking down that cross in front of the church. That would be considered group persecution.
Forced labor was another option, so they could be involved.
Yes.
Tom.
Yeah, in all of this, particularly the first several ones, the feeling that the evidence that we ought to get out of Afghanistan and out of country, and the question that bogs me down is, what is our obligation to all people who have worked with the U.S. military, the USAID, and the UN, and so on? And I don't know whether any of the panelists have good ideas. It's not a case of a war that gets started by itself, Rwanda, but a war that we have started and we feel that we must get out, and yet the Taliban will almost certainly take over.
I think that might be addressed to the entire panel.
You know, why don't we attempt to answer that personally and allow Richard to answer specific questions, unless you want to...
No, okay. We'll come back.
Thank you, Tom.
Any other questions? Please, yes.
Can I ask you, I'm sure you're planning to take this evidence on the roads and going to Washington, for example, and you maybe have done so already. Playing devil's advocate for a minute, I can imagine people saying that this type of low-intensity violence against a population group, if that were applied across the world, there would be dozens and dozens of countries. It's politically completely impossible. We launch investigations for all of those. Have you had any of those already, or are you expecting?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Are you saying that there are human rights violations all over the world, and basically, you know, why are we focusing on Burma? Is that what I'm inferring?
I can imagine that people in the political machinery of that would say, actually, there are probably very few people dying, kind of the most extreme form of persecution. Therefore, this is low intensity. And if this is low intensity, would we start an international commission on all countries that have this kind of intensive persecution?
No, it's actually a very good question. So I didn't point out that this research is ongoing, that we have researchers in the field, and I won't say in which ethnic minority states. So this is phase one. There will be four or five phases over the next year. So what will be interesting, perhaps I can come back next year and talk about a comparison of the ethnic minority states and crimes against humanity in all of them. I would say that we started off in, there are a number of reasons why we started off in Chin State, for the most part because it's so underreported. There are so few human rights reports on this specific area because it is so isolated. But I think once we go to the eastern side where there is ongoing armed conflict, we're going to see those prevalence rates increase dramatically.
Thank you very much.